Welcome to A Better Lifestyle. I am your host, Richard, and I will be with you throughout this journey. This show is here to empower individuals to do more in life professionally. You will find a variety of topics that will help you to be more productive and more successful. So join me and the professionals from different industries as we bring education and knowledge for more success. Hi, if this is your first time listening to the show and you like it, subscribe to the podcast at the end and please give it a review. Share the episode or the show with someone who you think would like it. And to all my faithful listeners, thank you for keep on listening. And if you could do the same, give it a review, share the podcast or the episode, it would be very appreciated. So on that note, thank you and let's get started.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to A Better Lifestyle. My name is Richard L'Espérance and I go by the name of My Man Richard. Today we're going to talk about venture capital. So for people who want to raise money for their business, it's going to be, you guys should take notes. My guest today is Pete Moore. He's doing some interesting stuff in the business world. So he's going to take, he's going to give us some great education. So please, Pete, tell everybody who you are, a brief resume of who you are in about 2 minutes, and we'll get started.
All right, my man, Richard, thanks for having me on the show and excited to share some pearls of wisdom, which is really just experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. So I've got a lot of experience in seeing people start businesses, pause businesses, restart businesses, pivot the business. So happy to talk about all those things and then some. My career started back in banking. So I used to work at a firm called Chase Manhattan Bank, which is now JP Morgan. So I was helping people doing mergers and acquisitions. So spending a lot of time in an Excel spreadsheet, PowerPoint presentations, and helping small companies either bring in capital or sell to another company in a merger or acquisition type of project or assignment. You know, as I spent 2 years there, I then worked at a firm called Donaldson, Lufkin and Jenrette and worked with a lot of private equity funds, which are basically later stage venture capital funds. And we're going to focus mostly on venture capital. But what I really learned from that experience is that it's all about the unit economics. It's all about your margins. It's all about how you kind of turn your engine and your machine and your business and what's the special sauce that you've applied to that in order to create something that is sustainable and recurring. So after that, I went to Harvard Business School, graduated there in 99. Then I went down to Florida because I got cold up in Boston and decided to work at an investment firm. And the first day I was there back in August 1999, August 1st, they had a letter of intent to acquire Gold's Gym International. And I used to be a high school athlete and intramural college athlete. And I think I'm still a weekend warrior. I am currently undrafted and have 4 years left of eligibility. My man, Richard, it's a joke. But I am an athlete from dawn to dusk. And I was able to get into the fitness industry back then in 99 and haven't left. I've been an investor. I've been an entrepreneur. I've been an angel investor. I've been an advisor, strategic, financial. And all the above. So I've seen a lot of different businesses. I've seen a lot of success stories. I've seen a lot of failures. At this point, I can kind of tell you how the story is going to go and how it's going to end unless you make certain changes to your business. And happy to, you know, do a crash course with you on some of the things I look at in early stage companies and some of the advice I give to entrepreneurs.
Great. For people who don't know, What is venture capital for people who don't know?
Yeah, great question. You know, when you think about new ideas that emanate, whether that's a frustration that somebody's solving. So, you know, if you think about a Swiffer, you know, it started off with a mop and it started off with a broom. And somebody said, you know what, somebody can do this better and I can come up with a better device to accomplish that task. And hence the Swiffer. You know, was invented and now is probably in pretty much every household in the country. But when the first person came up with that idea, they need to raise money to build a prototype. They needed money to get market validation. They needed to do focus groups. They needed to buy inventory in order to sell it. And typically, you're not going to find a late stage investor or a big investment or institutional group that's going to give you money to basically test out your idea. So venture capital is really an adventure in capital, if you will. And it is the first money that goes into a company to basically fund your experiment. And your experiment could be a product, could be a service. And then you're basically given the time until the money runs out to basically complete your first experiment. If that experiment goes well, then you get a Series A round. After that, you get a Series B, a Series C, D, E, F, and then you might become a public company one day and everyone can get their money back and they can make money on the heels of what you have created. So it all starts with a friends and family round, and that is exactly what it's called. If you need to raise money, the first people you go to are the people that you trust and that trust you. And that's typically how your first, venture capital investment gets raised. Then you have angel investors, which might be strangers, but really look for new ideas and big opportunities and try to back entrepreneurs that are onto something that is the next generation of where the puck is going. So when you start a new idea, you don't really want to necessarily build an idea for today. You want to build an idea of where the market is going to be in 12 to 24 months. So if I'm a gaming company and I'm thinking about artificial intelligence or machine learning, you know, a lot of those companies were funded 5-7 years ago, knowing that the puck was going into what do I do with this data and how do I become more intelligent? So I see a lot of startup companies related to health and fitness, workout recovery, new gym concepts. And I'm always trying to figure out what's the frustration that entrepreneur has stumbled upon. And is it a real personal one? And have they figured out a business model and a unit economic model in order to turn that into a real business and not just an experiment? And a lot of experiments fail. And a lot of entrepreneurs need to have that understanding that it's an experiment. And that experiment is not 100% going to work. So I'll stop there.
Well, that was a great explanation. So you've funded startups before in the past, right? Yeah,
that's correct. Yeah, okay. We funded about my firm now is called Integrity Square. We've been around since 2010. We've probably done about 120 different assignments in and around venture capital and private equity, whether that's leading an investment into an early stage idea. And those early stage ideas could be at different stages of the idea. So to give you an example, we funded a recruiting company that was a PowerPoint slide that said, hey, we could get college kids jobs into what we call the halo sector, health, active lifestyle, outdoors. We're creating the halo effect. So we've kind of redefined the health and wellness industry into the halo sector. People that are college athletes, division one, two, and three should be getting jobs in a natural extension of what they're doing, which is basically playing on a team. Once you play on a team, then you can go play for a health club team or a studio team or a workout recovery team. That's a natural extension of your sporting evolution if you don't make the pros. So that's an idea that we funded. We decided on a pre-money valuation. We helped put in $500,000 of high net worth investors who wanted to each put in 50 to 100 grand to hope that that company at some point would become the next Indeed or ZipRecruiter in the industry. Some of those things went well. Some of them didn't go well. But you're really constantly trying to understand what's being built and what's the special sauce and what's the work that needs to be done and what does the market want and how much they're willing to pay for it. So we've done things based on a PowerPoint slide and said, hey, we think this idea is worth $1 million. We're going to put in 500,000 and we're going to own 33% of the company. And if the experiment doesn't work, we get our 500 back before the entrepreneur gets their million of quote unquote pre-money valuation. We also funded two women in New York City that had a infrared sauna business, which started out as a location-based business to go into for detox, to go in there for a really deep sweat, to go in there after kind of a medical condition as part of a workout or medical recovery. That business during COVID had pivoted to mostly direct-to-consumer products. So there's a sauna blanket. There's a yoga mat that has electromagnetic fields in it. There's a LED light mask, and that company is called Higher Dose. And that company, originally we put $1.2 million in because they had a larger business to start with. So we own 24% of that company. And that company is now one of the largest women's run and managed workout recovery and beauty products companies in the halo sector. We've also funded some companies that things didn't work out. The market just wasn't right for their product, and those companies are tax write-offs. So we've kind of seen all the different types of businesses that are out there. And at each point, you kind of know which executives you need as part of the team, which areas of growth to go into. Do I go direct to consumer? Do I go wholesale? Do I go with my own bricks and mortar? So at every point, an entrepreneur needs to decide who they want to be. And it's a constant process of figuring out what your strategy is.
So what are the main stuff that you look for when you want to fund a startup?
So, you know, any entrepreneur that's listening to this right now and they want to start up, let's just say, a retail location, whether it's a workout recovery or let's just call it like a CrossFit type of gym. What they really need to understand is, okay, what are the unit economics? What could go on in the four walls of this location, and what companies are similar to this that you can do research on? So one of the things that entrepreneurs always need to know about is that there's something called franchise disclosure documents. So if you want to sell a franchise, whether it's a McDonald's, a Burger King, a Subway, an Orange Theory, a Planet Fitness, a Restore Hyper Wellness, any company that is selling operating systems and their brand to the mass market for entrepreneurs to potentially buy into their system, they have to file a 150-page document or more that includes the audited financials of the company, who's behind the business, all the fees. And in most of those documents, there's something called item 19. And item 19 will give you a very detailed snapshot of all the franchisees of, let's say, an Orange Theory. And it will tell you what kind of revenue they do, how many members they have, what their profit and loss statements look like on average. And that allows you a window into, if I build a company that's similar to this, this is what the operating results of that could be. Or maybe it's more important for me and better for me from a protection standpoint and for minimizing my losses to actually learn from what someone else learned. So franchising really is a business model that was set up that said, hey, I've got an operating model. I've got a special sauce. I can make money, and I'm going to allow other people to make money using my business model. And you have to do the research and figure out which one of those entities actually provides good returns for the capital. And then you have to figure out what your growth plan is and how many locations you want to potentially sign up for. There's a company called Exponential that has 10 different fitness brands, and you can pull all the information on each one of those to decide which one is the best return and which one you have a passion for. So you might have a passion for stretching, you might have a passion for Pilates, but you might not have a passion for yoga or boxing. So you really got to understand first, who's the entrepreneur? What is their DNA? What are they trying to achieve? What frustration are they trying to solve? And is there a profitable business on the other side of that business formation that you're going to give them money to prove out? So I'm always looking at the unit economics of what is within the four walls, and some of that I can get from research, some of that I could get from understanding what they're building and if it's similar to something else that I've seen before. And then you got to just understand what kind of fire is in the belly of an entrepreneur and what way they're going to proceed to build the business.
What mistakes you see entrepreneurs do when it's time to raise money?
I think most entrepreneurs probably try and raise money too early. So I think the first thing that you need to do, and if you've got a lot of conviction and decent credit, you can get a small business loan. So an SBA loan is the easiest way to get money for a new venture. You might need someone to help personally guarantee that with you and raise money from friends and family. But I think what a lot of entrepreneurs do is they start thinking about growth of the next location or growing their team instead of actually living in the location that they're in, their prototype, and how to optimize what's going on in the four walls of that location. So I think growth and the desire to grow sometimes takes entrepreneurs off the ball of saying, okay, I built this location. How can I optimize it? How does each piece of this puzzle work? What kind of systems are in place? What kind of controls are in place? What are the right people that I want inside of here? What's my market position? And how do I optimize what I'm doing so there's no fire drills? Once I optimize the four walls of this location, then I can go and grow to other locations. So what I see is people saying, yeah, I'm at 70% of where I think I am, but I'm going to go open up another location or two. And what they should really be doing is optimizing 100% of their current location before they start going out and looking for growth capital. There's always great ideas, but there's not always great execution. So you want to be the execution executive and entrepreneur, and not necessarily the growth entrepreneur where the wheels could fall off the bus at any point when you start to spread yourself too thin. So that's my biggest takeaway, is don't grow as quickly as you think you can. Wait an extra year, optimize what you're doing, make sure your cash flow is intact and your current investors are happy, and then you can move on to the next phase of growth.
So when it comes to equity, giving equity and setting up the contract, how does that really work? Are there different ways to set up a contract when it's time to do the venture capital?
Yeah, I would say it's more of an art than a science when it comes to the valuations of businesses. But when people want to give you money and fund your business, figure out a fair price, because if you set the price of your current business too high, then you're going to upset your investors later on when they know that you've overpriced the valuation of the company today. So, you know, my man, Richard, if you had a yoga studio and you said, hey, this yoga studio is worth $5 million and you bring in $5 million, you know, for 50% of the company, but the yoga studio was really worth $2 million, it's going to be hard for you to dig out of that valuation. So you always want to come up with a fair valuation for a business. A lot of people probably watch Shark Tank. That's more on the ground floor of what companies should be worth. And I would always look at kind of 1x revenue for a business, or 5 to 6x the cash flow that's coming out of that business. And that's typically what I see for early stage companies. If you're a software company, then you're going to trade at a multiple of revenue. But if you're a business that is just an operating business and has one lease, then I think you have to be very realistic about the valuation that you have and bring in investors to get you to the next phase, whether that's another location, whether that's putting out a licensing or a franchising agreement. But I think you have to get legal advice. You got to get financial advice. You got to call people that have done deals in the industry to make sure that your deal is appropriately priced. And then you have to have a lot of conviction and market to the shareholders that you're trying to bring on board that there's a good return for them committing capital, you know, to your project versus someone else's.
So what about the once, like when you give equity, what's the saying of the investor in the project, in the deal? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, typically what you want to do before you sell equity in a business is to have certain operating rules in place. So there's something called an operating agreement. That operating agreement basically governs what I'm, as the entrepreneur, allowed to do and what I need to get investor consent on. So if I put $5 million into your company, you can't take that $5 million and go say, hey, we're going to do a yacht. We're going to buy a small yacht. We're going to do yoga on the yacht. I'll be like, my man, Richard, we didn't fund $5 million for the yacht. We funded $5 million for 5 new yoga studios. So if there's anything you spend over $50,000, you got to get my signature on it, or you got to get an email consent that this is the money that I put in and this is the plan that we agreed to, and you got to stick to the plan. So one thing is these are called negative controls. Okay, that's like the financial term. Like, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm going to tell you what you can't do, right? So they call them negative controls. Now, if you flip it around, a negative control is a positive control. So don't get freaked out when you think about, oh, wow, I have to ask these people for pretty much if I want to hire a CFO. if I want to make an investment more than $50,000, if I want to sign a new lease, if I want to give options to some of my employees, if I want to raise my salary, all these things are going to have investor consent. So when you bring on an investor, you now work for that investor. And that's the point of them investing, is for you to take good care of their money and find a path for them to get a gain on that investment. If somebody puts their money into their savings account and gets a couple of percentage points interest, you know, if I put money into my man Richard's yoga platform, like I want to make 30%, because there's a good chance that, no offense, right, but you might not work, it might not work out, right? So if I'm going to take the risk that 50% chance like this doesn't work out, we got one yoga studio in 5 years from now, or maybe a 50% chance we got 10 yoga studios, you know, I want a 30% return on that investment. So, you know, we might fund the company at 10 million. And hopefully when we get to the 10 locations, after the 5 million that you own and the 5 million I put in for the 10 million, we own 50%, that at that point, you know, we sell it to a private equity fund or some yoga studio chain that's going to pay us 40 million. So we got a $30 million gain. You made 20 million bucks and I made 20 million bucks on my 5 million investment. I made four times my money, which equates to about a 30 or 40% annual return, as if you return that kind of money to me. So once I invest in the company, I can't get my money back until we sell. It might have a clause in there that says, hey, after 5 years or 10 years, like you have to sell the company and try and get me my money back. And then it's a question of, is the investor 50-50, which I never recommend. Could be either 51% to you and 49 to me, or 51-49 or 80-20. But once you as the investor sign up for bringing in capital, you've got to realize that you now are responsible for the capital and that you're basically an employee of the board of directors. So I wouldn't take in capital unless you're ready. Also, if you're an entrepreneur, you know, one of the reasons why you're an entrepreneur is because you're looking for freedom, and you give away some of that freedom by taking other people's money to fund the rest of your experiment and your growth. So I think you got to be very sobered by the fact that when I do bring in investors, I'm signing a legal agreement. They're going to have certain rights of what I can and can't do. Even if I know it's the best thing for the company, I've got to now convince other people that this is where we're taking the business.
There was one podcast I was listening to when you were talking about venture firms, private equity and debt fund. Could you explain a little bit what is that?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's important to start out with, you know, where's all this money coming from? So when you think about, you know, where big pools of capital are, there's a big pool of capital. What school did you go to?
Pardon?
What college?
No, I didn't go to college.
Oh, okay. So let's take a random college. They might, you know, University of Miami, they might have like a $10 billion endowment fund where they get gifts from their alumni, they get grants from different organizations or family offices to build out their campus and to add more programs and to have more scholarships available and to build a lot more buildings. So that $10 billion that is in the University of Miami's endowment fund has to be invested somewhere. So what they do is they'll buy, you know, 1 million shares of Apple stock. They'll buy 1 million shares of Amazon. They'll go and buy, they'll put $100 million into a venture capital fund or funds. They'll put $100 million into private equity funds. They'll put money into a real estate fund. They'll put money into an index fund, emerging markets. So these investment advisors and managers of the endowment fund have $10 billion that is with this organization, this university, and they're hoping that they can get a 7 or 8% return a year on that money. So if I have $10 billion, I'm going to have, let's say 8% of 10 billion, I'm going to have $800 million of capital that I can now use to fund all the projects that I want at the school. And I want to make sure I don't lose that 10 billion, but I also want to make sure that I have the upside. So if there's another Uber, if there's another Amazon, if there's another Peloton, well, that lasted. I want to have some exposure to these other asset classes. So if you look at the school that you went to, people in the audience here, they'll have a list of how they spend their money. And the largest group is a group called CalPERS, which is the California Teacher Pension Fund. that has a $440 billion fund that pays for the pensions and for the health insurance of all the prior California teachers and public workers. And they've got over $30 billion into private equity and venture capital. So a lot of the investments that are made in a, if you see a Crunch Fitness or you see a Massage Envy or you see a Subway chain or you see a Dunkin' Donuts chain, a lot of those companies are owned by private equity firms or venture capital firms that got money from pension funds and endowment funds and high net worth investors, insurance companies that are collecting premiums. They're putting that money into venture capital and private equity. So there's a group, if you and I got together and we called it, you know, my man Richard and Petey Moe's private equity fund, we'd go back to my old college, you know, Emory University down in Atlanta. We say, hey, we're teaming up. We're going to go back awesome entrepreneurs. We've been doing this for a long time together, you know, raising $100 million fund. And they might say, okay, put me in for 20%. So we would get $20 million from Emory University. And every time we did a deal, we would send them an email that says you got to pay 20% of the price that we're putting into each one of these companies. And then we'd have a fund. And that fund might have 10 different venture capital investments. And we try to make one of those companies, you know, the next Uber or the next Google. There'll be a couple companies that do really well. And there are a couple companies that, you know, just aren't going to grow. And we made bad decisions, but we have that portfolio effect that we've got 10 venture capital investments. So that's where the venture capital and private equity money is coming from. It's coming from large institutions that are trying to put money to work in order to get a return to either build their campus, to pay for their employee pension funds, to pay for insurance claims. So there's really, really big dollars that are out there that are now going into companies that you as an entrepreneur might be competing with or that you might be a franchisee of.
Okay. I want to talk. I'm running out of time. What's your take on NFTs and it could be a new way of crowdfunding in the future. What's your take on that?
Look, I think crowdfunding is fine, but I think as an entrepreneur, before you take that money in, you need to make sure that you are going to treat your investors as if you would friends and family investors. So, you know, you have a lot of small investors that are putting in $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, you know, into a company, you know, without any real corporate governance. They don't know if you're going to take this money in, you're going to change your salary from 100 grand to 300 grand. You don't know if, you know, they're going to have any board representation or that there's nothing going out of the company in cash that shouldn't go in and out of. So I think there's a lot of potential bad actors in crowdfunding, just like there were a lot of people that filled out, you know, fake PPP loans, right? So, you know, that's a risk of it. But I think the first traditional route that I would always go down as an entrepreneur is to try and get people that are around you, people that you're going to partner up with to actually build the business. Don't build the business on your own if you don't have to. You know, entrepreneurship is a lonely place. I'm sure you could, you know, rationalize that, you know, when you're on your own and you're running your own business, it's very isolating. So if you have a good business partner that you trust that you could find and you can work out a fair deal with, I highly encourage people to think about that as a dynamic duo and not a sole entrepreneur. I think the best entrepreneurs that I've seen have always had a wingman or a wingwoman that kind of was a yin yang that definitely benefited the business and they were able to make the right decisions going down that path. But I would say from a standpoint of, you know, building a business and understanding, you know, who your investors are and communicating with them is essential because you're going to want to either go back to those investors and tell them good news and bad news, or you're going to have to go back to them and try and get more capital. So you got to be communicating at all times. And, you know, no business goes from 0 to 100, you know, you go 0 to -20, you know, to +40 to -10. And then you get up to 100 after you kind of figured it out. So it's a long journey to be an entrepreneur. And crowdsourcing, I think, is, you know, an option, but I don't think it should be the top option. I think, you know, raising some debt from some government sources, which is SBA loans, Small Business Association loans, equipment financing companies that'll help you with build out, friends and family, or you know, somebody that is close to you or a business partner. That's the first track that I would go down before I you know, did some NFT and try to sell, you know, a piece of the business, you know, based on some electronic art. But maybe I'm a little old school.
So where can people, if they want more information about you, where can people find you on social media or the internet?
Yeah, thanks. You know, our main podcast, and hopefully we'll have you on ours as well here soon, is called Halo Talks, HALOTalks.com. And you can find that on all the different podcast channels. We also do a Halo Academy, which you can also find on halotalks.com, which is basically a 2-week bootcamp business school for entrepreneurs in and around the health, active lifestyle, outdoor category. So I tear through all the different business models of everything from Planet Fitness to SoulCycle, Cycle for Survival, Peloton, LA Fitness, WeWork, Zoom, Beyonce going direct instead of going through record labels. So I do that crash course, and that's next one on that is September. And then my advisory firm is called Integrity Square. So if you have integrity, you're allowed in the square. If you're a client of Integrity Square, you're protected by the square. So kind of old school. And that's at integritysq.com. But we got over 400 podcasts with entrepreneurs on Halo Talks. Feel free to rip through those with people that you think, you know, might have the same vision and get some, you know, nuggets of wisdom from them. And, you know, look, you got one life to live. My man, Richard, as I say, that the planet, which most people don't know, is moving at 66,000 miles an hour around a fireball, basically for no reason. And it's rotating at 1,200 miles on like a slight diagonal axis. So, you know, you got one life to live. If you got a great idea, pursue it. You know, make sure you do it methodically. Think about, you know, what could happen on the upside, and also think about what your downside is and figure out if you want to take that risk. Entrepreneurship is probably the most exhilarating as well as demoralizing profession or job title you will ever have. But it's a wild ride, and you're going to learn a lot about yourself. You're going to learn to figure out how to solve problems. And, you know, it's probably going to be the best use of your time if you have a great idea, or if you partner up with someone that has a great idea and be on the ground floor. But, you know, you got to weigh your risk tolerance and what your responsibilities are first. But I, you know, welcome people to hit us up if we can be helpful, in anything, because new jobs, new ideas, you know, new innovations is what kind of drives, you know, us forward as a civilization. And there should never be stunted growth on that front, or else I think everything else unravels. So new ideas, new enthusiasm and passion is what's going to create the halo sector into something that people feel is core to their lives and makes them happier and healthier. So that's why I've dedicated my life to it.
All right. Thanks, Pete, for accepting my invitation. I wanted to do a podcast on venture capital for a while, and I'm glad that you accepted my invitation.
Awesome, man. It's great talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. It was great information. So like I said, thanks again for being here. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this podcast. Welcome to A Better Lifestyle. My name is Richard L'Espérance, and I was with Pete Moore. And we'll see you on the next episode, everybody. Bye.
Go Halo, baby. Go Halo.
Bye, everybody. Thank you for listening. If there's any topics you would like me to touch, feel free to reach out to me, and I'll do my best to make it happen. I'm on most social media platforms, and you could send me an email. You will find the links in the show notes. And also, don't forget, if this is your first time listening to the podcast and you like it, please don't forget to subscribe at the end. Thank you, and see you next time.